Hi, good evening, and welcome to Noir on the Radio. I'm Greg Barth, and tonight I'll be talking to author Robert Brockway. You can join in on the conversation as well just by dialing 347-633-9609 at any point during the live show. Once again, that number is 347-633-9609. A little about tonight's guest. Robert Brockway is a columnist and senior editor for Crack.com. He's the author of the recently released novel, The Empty Ones, as well as The Unnoticeables, the first two installments of the Vicious Circuit trilogy from Tor Books. Other works include RX, A Tale of Electronegativity, and Everything is Going to Kill Everybody, The Terrifyingly Real Ways the World Wants You Dead. He lives in Portland, Oregon with his wife, Megan, and their two dogs, Detectives Martin Riggs and Roger Murtaugh. He once fought a bear, but the judges are still calculating scores. There's no clear winner at this time. Robert Brockway, welcome to Noir on the Radio. It's great to have you on with us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, so first things first, man, tell us about this bear fight.
I just always find those little biographies really, really boring and tough to do unless I entertain myself. So I like to slip elaborate lies about myself into them. And sometimes those elaborate lies make it out to the people at large, and I hope history will remember them as truths.
Very good, very good. So for any listeners tonight that may not be familiar with you and your work, tell us a little about yourself, you know, your experience, the things that make you the writer you are today.
Well, I mean, I started off with Cracked. If you're not familiar with Cracked, it's kind of like a Wikipedia, but with dick jokes and numbers. It's a nonfiction comedy kind of thing. Run down just interesting stuff about the world and make jokes about it, and, you know, informative but lighthearted, entertaining kind of thing. And that segues nicely into my first book, Everything is Going to Kill Everybody. I actually got approached by the publisher because of my columns that I ran on Cracked. She just really liked my writing style and wanted to see if I had ideas for a book. So, of course, my first ideas were books about killing all the human race. I guess that's kind of a personal problem. But that too, is a nonfiction book. It's the only nonfiction book I have right now. It's all about the real ways that the apocalypse almost happened. We have had a few close calls that really would have exterminated most of humanity and eventually done the job. How it could happen in feasible ways right now, or how it could happen in the future in not so feasible ways. All just kind of stuff that would affect you directly. A lot of hard science, but trying to dumb it down for idiots like me to understand. And then making jokes about it. I also wrote RX, Tale of Electronegativity, that started off as a serial novel. I think there were three parts to it. Just kind of an interesting experiment that I wanted to do. And the idea of the experiment was that I would release a part and people would give me feedback on it. And in exchange for that feedback, they could get the next part for free. And so if they kept with me and kept giving me feedback, they would end up getting the whole book for free, but I would get a huge network of beta readers. And it did work out that way. So the final collected version is quite a bit different from the serial novel version. And in a nutshell, it's sort of cyberpunky, kind of pharmaceutical thing about using drugs to time travel, which you do. I mean, you use drugs to time travel. That's how you accomplish that these days. And then I sold this trilogy, the Vicious Circuit trilogy, to Tor Books. It's kind of a tough one to explain, so bear with me. It's the central conceit is that you can use mathematics to describe anything in the universe, even if it's down to just noting where every single atom is, what it's going to do, where it's going, where it's been. It may take forever. It may not be feasible for us, but it could be done. And if it could be done, maybe there are creatures out there that we can't even begin to understand that can not only see that code that makes up the universe, but manipulate it. And to those creatures, life is the least orderly, the most messy code, and especially humanity. I mean, most of us are just huge elements of our personalities are made up by misremembered memories or lyrics from theme songs that we can't get out of our heads or just false prejudices. It's just a whole, it's a wreck inside of us. And so they go in and they clean it up. They simplify the code that is human beings. Oh, there go my dogs. I'll give them a second. They simplify the code that is human beings, and that leaves behind a pretty monstrous byproduct, because we were not meant to be cleared out of all of our humanity, and that creates these creatures that are sort of representative each of humanity's baser instincts and urges, and that's what the sort of villains and the problem is in the series, the Vicious Circuit series. It follows two timelines. Carrie, who was a young drunk punk rocker in the late 70s, New York, and then London. And in the third book, it's going to be L.A. in the 80s. And Caitlin, who is an aspiring stuntwoman in Hollywood, though she's mostly just a waitress. And they both start noticing their friends disappearing and these weird things popping up, and kind of get pulled into this whole timeline that is way, way, way above their heads.
Wow, yeah, that's some intriguing stuff. So your latest work, The Empty Ones, just released on August the 30th, and it's the second volume of the Vicious Circus trilogy. This series to me really captures the late 1970s punk rock scene in New York, in the Unnoticeables, and then London as well, in The Empty Ones, and it sounds like you're moving toward the 80s. In the next edition, I'm interested in what drew you to that scene for your novels, and also, is this research on your part, or were you close to that scene yourself back in the day? Or?
Well, I missed the scene by a long time. I wasn't even born in the time period that this takes place in, but I was into punk rock as a kid and up into as a young man. I still listen to a lot of it, so I guess I'm still into punk rock. I just, no longer dress the part or throw beer cans at cops or anything. But partly that, and partly I kind of needed the scene as both a convenient set piece for why people would be disappearing, but the authorities weren't interested. Late 70s New York was really just a really dangerous and dark place, and nowhere were people less valued than the punk rockers. I mean, the conventional society not only didn't care about them, they actively hated them. They would be celebrating if the punk rockers started disappearing, because the only people that could help each other and look after each other were the other punks. So it creates a sense of isolation in one part, but also thematically, striving for identity and defiance, the punk scene would be most at odds with this sort of code solving, everything is just numbers to manipulate, you're not really a person kind of ideal. So it was sort of necessary for that, and also it was just fun, and it gave me an excuse to do quite a bit of research into the punk scene. So I got to write off some pretty good books and a lot of good music, and just listen to punk really loudly and tell people I was working.
That's awesome. Yeah, I didn't quite make the scene either. I think I was born in 71, so I was, kind of aware of kind of the world at the time, but not the music. I certainly didn't hear it back then, and it didn't mean as much to me as it did later in life, but I really think you capture that era quite well. I like the ensemble characters in the 70s timeline, especially their names. I mean, you have characters like Safety Pins, Elmer Spikes, Scuffed Flannel, Thing One, Thing Two. There's a lot of physical description that comes through in those nicknames. What were you going for when you chose those?
Well, part of that is it's a first-person point of view, so you're really getting these other characters through Carrie's point of view, and Carrie is extremely self-centered. He kind of views himself above a lot of these characters because maybe they're not necessarily as real a punk as he is, but also just because they're younger than he is, so he has sort of a sense of control over them, and he doesn't really bother to learn their names, or rather he pretends not to learn their names. So he gives them really basic nicknames based on their appearance or whatever urge he comes across, and so that's really a way to comment on the actual narrator and how you're seeing him.
And there's a nice contrast, I think, there too, between the chapters with Carrie versus the, the chapters with Caitlin. They're two very different characters in different timelines, but they're dealing with kind of the same type of situation. What's it like writing those two separate timelines, you know, just from a writer's perspective?
It can be tricky. I certainly have to, when I finish one chapter, if I finish a Carrie chapter one day, I can't like immediately flip over and start working on a Caitlin chapter, or Carrie's voice will start bleeding into hers and I'll have her saying or doing things or making observations or using words that are just not at all her because they're such different people. So it's definitely like I have to skip days. I have to like separate out this character this day, that character that day. And even still, I'll have to go back through with a really keen eye on word choice and observation and be like, oh, that's such a good line, but that's Carrie's line and it's not a Caitlin's and it doesn't fit, and so it has to go. It's an interesting balance to strike.
He's definitely the more snarky of the two, I would say. So the Vicious Circuit trilogy has been described as dark comedy, I've read, and then it I think it has elements of urban fantasy, horror, sci-fi, I think. And I like how Publishers Weekly calls it a foul-mouthed, hard-drinking adventure, which reads like a collaboration by Hunter S. Thompson, the Sex Pistols, and H.P. Lovecraft, and mentions its gutter-dwelling vibe and its down-and-out protagonist, which to me makes it appropriate for noir on the radio. But I'm curious, as far as genre classification is concerned, which shelf would you put these on?
I have no idea. I mean, I never really distinguished about genre too much before I started selling these. I mean, it wasn't my first experience with a major publisher, but it was so easy to classify. Everything is going to kill everybody. And it's a nonfiction humor. There you go. That's what it's about. Even then, some bookstores put it in science, and I was like, oh, God, no, don't put it in science. I mean, there's science in it, but don't try to trick people. But for the Unnoticeable series, I kind of came in and asked them to, I said it's horror and, you know, but with science fiction tones. And then they told me it was urban fantasy, and which to my undistinguished eye seemed like thought that was, you know, Twilight stuff. I thought it was, you know, bare-chested werewolves and sexy vampires. And it's like, well, it's not really that. But then they explain, you know, well, it's an urban environment. It takes place in the modern day in the real world, but there's just this central conceit that there are fantasy elements and they're interacting with it, really. So, okay, it's urban fantasy, but it's also horror, but it's also sci-fi. And I can totally see noir, too. For example, in the audiobook, which is great. They did such a good job on the audiobook. Scott Merriman, oh God, forgive me if I got your name wrong, but pretty sure it's Scott Merriman does the unknown chapters, which were kind of written with like a noir feel in mind, especially because the guy's a little bit older and he's definitely been down and out for longer. And Scott gives it this really classic, like Chandler-esque reading, and it's really cool stuff. So I guess whatever genre you want to put it in is okay by me.
I think it fits a lot of places, and I think anybody would enjoy this if they're fans of those any one of those genres, likely. So, you know, for those listeners who haven't checked out the Unnoticeables or the Empty Ones yet, but may be interested based on our conversation tonight, what more would you like to tell them? Anything else on these two books?
Well, I've actually heard two different ways. I've heard that you absolutely have to read the first one or you'll be lost from some people, and I've heard that they started cold with the Empty Ones and managed to be a little confused at first but picked it up. There's not exactly a last time on the Vicious Circuit series starting chapter, although that's not a bad idea. I wish we kind of did that. So it depends on how willing you are to go without answers for a bit of time, but they're not cliffhangers. I know that's a big deal to a lot of people. Like the arcs and the stories are somewhat complete by the end of each book. That's the goal. But that there is a larger story unfolding across and through all the books, and the answers that you seek will be unfolded through all three novels. So It depends on your reading style, whether or not you need to pick up the first one before starting on the second one, whether or not you need to wait before the third one, which I believe we're tentatively calling it Kill All Angels. It's a little nod to B-horror from me. But it should be out summer of next year, so you wouldn't even have that long of a wait if that's how you prefer to read.
Very good. All right, folks, so if you like well-written, gritty, violent punk rock fiction with great characters and some tar men and angels thrown in, you really need to check out The Empty Ones and The Unnoticeables. And they're everywhere you can find Tor books, which is everywhere. So just a reminder, if you'd like to call in and talk to our guest tonight, just dial 347-633-9609 and speak to Robert Brockway. And Noir on the Radio is a trademarked, copyrighted podcast solely owned by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, LLC. So, Robert, you touched on the other books out there as well, RX, A Tale of Electronegativity, and Everything is Going to Kill Everybody, The Terrifying Real Ways the World Wants You Dead. What more would you like to tell us about those?
Well, RX was an interesting experiment. I touched on briefly what it was and what the idea was behind getting the large network of beta readers. And I think if you're going to look into that, there are a lot of versions. You can still probably find a serial novel somewhere. But what's really interesting is how much better the large network of beta readers made RX, the final version. There's a lot of changes in it, just on the even line-by-line basis. But also some larger changes, specifically in the start of the story. They really helped me to figure out how to start a story, where people want to come into it, and how much patience they'll have for sort of just abstract navel gazing on the part of the author. That it was originally where the story started, but now it just jumps right into where you should start caring about the characters, which is a lesson I apparently needed to learn on the start of that. And it also cuts out kind of early in the serial novel version, which I wanted to leave the ending sort of ambiguous and an abstract, open to interpretation kind of thing for my artistic sensibilities, and the readers also helped me realize that no, you're being a pretentious jerk. Just, you know, tell us what we actually need to know and finish this out in a good and satisfying way, which are both true. If I sound bitter about it, it's not bitter at the readers for giving me that feedback so much as myself for needing it in the first place. But I took it to heart, and the finished product, I think, is all the better for it if you get the full version. It definitely owes a lot to cyberpunk stuff, definitely a lot to William Gibson and some Bruce Sterling Scherer and Neal Stephenson. Those were big influences on me when I first really started reading genre fiction. But it's not exactly about, you know, hacking or the cyberpunk sort of lifestyle. It's just kind of a background and atmospheric thing, which, funnily enough, I mean, yeah, that you've probably noticed that has a lot in common with noir, too. Cyberpunk and noir worlds are very thematically tied close together. So it's
certainly.
It's an interesting little thing. It's a lot like, you might notice I have problems just mashing all sorts of genres together. I just can't seem to write that straightforward book that this is about a murder and solving it, or this is about divorce. I wish I could. It would be so much easier.
Well, you know, I think there's it really helps the fiction, you know, The Empty Ones and The Unnoticeables, that mashup of those genres. It was just a rich read, especially for somebody who doesn't just pick one genre as their favorite form of entertainment, but likes to dip and dabble into various things. It's you know, it's a lot of fun to just get that amount of texture to it. Would you be interested in replicating that serial novel process again in the future, or is that kind of a one and done, and you've got enough other projects to not be interested in that so much now?
A complicated answer in that I'm interested in it because it did work for what I wanted it to work for, and I think it engaged a lot of readers in a way that passively reading a book doesn't, when you know you can, not likely, but it's possible you could have some influence on the final novel. Your feedback could be a part of that. It really seemed to catch a lot of people, and it was a lot of fun. But I don't think I'd be willing to try it again because I'm an essentially lazy person at heart, and it was just a crazy amount of work. I mean, I had no idea how much work that was going to be. It was just constant, you know, managing of the feedback and sending out these books and applying the feedback to each version and each draft and huge cuts and revisions based on things and then maybe realizing those didn't work and getting that feedback. And it was just, it's a lot more streamlined to do it the conventional way that we do it, which is that I write a manuscript and I have this network of beta readers and I send it out and you give me the feedback and then I go through it all at the same time. It's not quite as a real-time part of the process and industrial feeling as I got, but for the lazy person, it's the only way to go.
So let's talk a little bit about the craft of writing itself. Tell us a bit about how you write. Like, things do you outline or fly by the seat of your pants, write every day, plan out your fiction projects to allow time for other things? What does your approach to writing look like?
Well, I definitely outline. I know there are some people that are vehemently against outlining and that it doesn't allow your art to shine through or something. I don't know. Whatever works for them. Some of the authors that I really like are whatever the term is, pantsers, falling by the seat of their pants. But I definitely need an outline because I'm kind of terrified that I'll get to the end of something I put a lot of work into and loved and find out that it was just bullshit and I shouldn't have bothered. I think I got a little bit scarred by Battlestar Galactica remake and Lost in that sense. They both admitted that they just were making it up as they went along. And then when you got to the end, you were like, oh, yeah, yes, you were. Yes, you were. That was a total waste of everybody's time. So I took those things to heart and outline. But I also am willing to, yeah, as I'm writing it, alter, discard, change that outline however I need to. If a voice I'm working, if a plot point, or if sometimes, in the example of the empty ones, one character just kind of took over. She was originally sort of a bit part, that was Meryl, and now the whole book sort of hinges around her, what happens to her once she becomes. And as I was realizing that, I had to revise and change the outline. I end up deleting it a lot and reworking it every time I make a major change. So kind of an inefficient hybrid of both approaches. Let's see. I don't write every day, but I certainly try to make it part of my work week. I find that's easier to me. And that once everything's done, I give myself a little break to get my mind out of the conventional comedy nonfiction editing phase, and then I jump into writing the book as much as I can. I usually get, 1,000 to 2,000, depending on how easy the flow is coming per day. And, yeah, I guess that's about it.
Yeah. So which writers would you name as major inspirations or influences on your work?
And they're just, you know, I think this is where the difficulty in the pulling in of so many genres is I'm such a spread out reader as well. I started off reading, you know, high fantasy stuff. I was never smart enough for Tolkien, but I loved the Dragonlance books. It was the first books I can remember really, really getting into. And then I pursued that, you know, exclusively for a while. And then I got into cyberpunk kind of noir stuff during the bleak teenage years. And then I fancied myself an artist. So I started only reading literary fiction and, you know, that genre fiction that's beneath you as a 19, 20 year old who thinks they know everything. But then I started exploring genre stuff and I found I really liked just about everything. I mean, science fiction, horror, all of that stuff is important, and it has elements that you can use and that you can learn from. So influences are anything from of course, early Stephen King, horror owes him everything, to, like I said earlier, the William Gibson and Neal Stephenson. I liked I still like Italo Calvino's work a lot for like literary stuff. I'm just sort of bouncing all over the map.
Yeah, a rich palette of influence to draw from. It sounds like. What advice would you give to someone who is thinking about being a writer? Just how to get started and launch their career as a writer.
Well, I mean, first, I guess I'd tell them to revise their attitude, just because it's not to be snotty, but just because it's generally wrong one way or the other. For example, I was wrong. I kind of always wanted to be a writer since those damn Dragonlance books. But I figured that was like asking to be a rock star. Like, there's no way you can do it. And so I didn't bother doing it. I did everything around it. But, you know, I went and I took English classes, but not, you know, writing courses, because that would be a waste. But English classes totally aren't. And I tried to get into like the actual technical side of publishing, and then maybe technical writing or copy editing, because I was so sure that those were, they're like writing, but they're real jobs, and you could never make a living. Not to say I'm making a living at my writing yet, but you could never do this in any professional capacity, because it's too grand a dream. It's like saying you want to grow up to be a star quarterback or something. I thought it was naive, and that's not true. There's a huge place for the hobbyist and for the mid-list author, and that can always turn into an actual supportive career, and it's certainly worthwhile and rewarding to pursue it, even if it doesn't, because most of the writers I know do it as their second jobs, and they would never stop, even if they have to do their first jobs. They will always be a part of what they do and who they are. But, I mean, there's the other kind of attitude that is, my art is precious and it cannot ever be changed, and I'm, you know, a nurturing flower that must be carefully preserved at all costs, and that's certainly a equally toxic attitude to it. You need to go into it realizing that you're going to be terrible at first, and in the case of some of us, you're going to continue to be terrible for a very long time. But you can learn from people around you. You can learn from readers. You can learn from other writers, and it's just, it's a craft like anything. It's more of a craft than an art. So if you keep that headspace, a balance between those two approaches, I think you'll probably be all right.
I think that's good advice. Thanks for sharing that. I think of writers as entertainers, and I'm always interested in what entertains others who are entertainers. What kinds of things are you watching these days, listening to, reading? What entertains Robert Brockway?
Well, what I'm reading right now is a book called Bird Box by, oh, I don't have it right in front of me, Josh Malerman. Again, just like with Scott, if that was his name. I'm terrible with names. I'm sorry if I got your name wrong. But it's a killer book. It's so good. It's really tightly paced, really just bare bones, lean, mean machine about a post-apocalypse thing where if you see whatever caused the downfall of man, you go like violently, self-destructively insane. So all of the characters are just kind of stumbling about the woods trying to survive with blindfolds on, and just everything is a source of terror. Every little noise, I mean, if there's a dog, it can do anything it wants to you. It's just, it's a killer premise executed really well. And for music, I'm all over the map too. I go anywhere from like rap to country to metal to punk. Still a lot of punk. My favorite current band right now is probably Future of the Left. They're a sort of post-punk, a little bit of math rock, metal-ish kind of band. Their last few releases have been especially enthralling. You just have to listen to the whole thing once you start listening. Really, really cool stuff. As for TV, I think the last thing I watched that I was really into was Stranger Things. It was a really good show. I heard all of the arguments about how they didn't do anything new, but I definitely disagree. I think you can make something new out of old parts. I think they really hit the head on that. I'm super stoked that they got a season two.
Very cool. Very cool. So where can people find you out there on the web and keep up with you and what's up and coming?
Oh, I'm all over the place. My site is robertbrockway.net. I have a Twitter and a Facebook. I don't remember offhand what they're... I know my Twitter is Brockway LLC. I think it's an underscore in there, too. But, you know, with auto sign-in, I don't need to know these things anymore. So if you can just look me up on Twitter or Facebook, you'll probably find me. I mean, my go-to line is there's two Robert Brockways you'll get results for right now, and one of them is a horrible misogynist who's heavy into the red men's rights movement, and that's not me. So if you follow me and you're like, oh, man, this guy is terrible towards women, you are following the wrong guy.
Oh, the wrong Robert Brockway. Okay. So you mentioned, I believe it was Kill All Angels next summer. Okay. What, any other new and exciting projects we should be watching for, or is that kind of the next big thing?
Well, that one is actually in the pipe. It's finished. I've taken the first couple of editing passes, and it is in the hands of the publisher right now because they have such an aggressive release schedule. It should be out summer of 2017, Kill All Angels, tentatively titled. I hope they'll let me keep it. I like it. I think it fits with the sort of vibe of all the rest of them. I'm currently also about halfway through a project that I'm using a pen name for because I'm not sure if it's going to turn out to be any good, and if it does, if it's within my wheelhouse enough to keep it under my name. It's sort of a series of collected short stories, but it's not an anthology. It's more like kind of like World War Z by Max Brooks, where each of these stories may be independent on their own, but together they like build this larger world and a tale of what's happening to humanity at large through this. And it has elements to Lovecraft, but it's also sort of a zombie thing, but it's also sort of a post-apocalyptic survival thing. It's all over the place, and it should be... I hope it turns out good. I hope it's interesting.
Very nice, very nice. Well, Robert, I want to thank you for joining me on Noir on the Radio tonight. It's been really great having you on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was lots of fun.
Yeah. And for the listeners, I encourage you to check out Robert Brockway's books, The Unnoticeables, The Empty Ones. As noir fans, I know you'll appreciate the gritty urban punk rock scenes and the unflinching look at that hard-drinking lifestyle. They're nice and violent, too. Also, keep your eye out for the upcoming novel from your host, Rogue Carnage by Greg Barth, the fourth in the Selena series, and second to last, I might add. It's something I'll be blatantly self-promoting like a madman in the very near future, so get ready for that. And thanks for tuning in to Noir on the Radio. Until next time.